Yo, 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 yo. Pop a 40 and check your rollies. It's crime time.
Brooklyn, Brooklyn.
Did you find a similar thing with Triple H there at the end?
Absolutely night and day. I had a very difficult time getting a hold of Hunter on multiple occasions, and it was never easy. And that's why I think the company, I'd rather see keep Vince as the main big dog in charge. Yo, 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 it's your boy JTG, a.k.a. the Radiator Man, because you know your boy stays with that heat. And you are listening to the Solid Monster Sounds Off. Cheer.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster Sounds Off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to a special Mother's Day edition of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, May 9th, 2015. I am the Solid Monster. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there, including my own. I know I've been kind of cryptic about some things that have been going on lately, but I will talk more about that at the end of this week's episode, so you'll want to stay tuned for that. Also, you heard the clip there at the top of the podcast. I had the opportunity this weekend to chat with JTG, former WWE superstar, who has a new book out. It is an ebook called Damn, Why Did I Write This Book? It is very funny, very entertaining, very interesting in the things that you learn about the some of the inner workings in WWE, especially coming from the perspective of somebody who was on the roster, relegated to the mid-card, and had to go through a lot of shit. So he talks about that in the book, the good and the bad. It's a really kind of a primer in what heat is, at least in WWE, how one goes about getting heat, even if you don't seek heat out. Nobody wants to get heat, but the different ways that you can end up with heat, the different kinds of heat. He has a whole heat glossary at the end, all the different commandments of how you can get in trouble in the WWE locker room. It gave me a headache after a while. I mean, it's just mind-numbing, all of the stupid little things that can get you into some hot water in that company, and he went through it. So it's a great read. It was a great conversation. You can find it right now on our YouTube channel. It's up there as a sound-off extra. So head on over to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesolemonster. You can subscribe to the channel there. That way, whenever something like an interview pops up, you will be the first to be alerted about it. So head on over there, hit the subscribe button, give it a like, comment, all that good stuff. The book is going to be available this week by the time you are listening to this on Amazon. It was for 99 cents through different means, and now it's going up to $2.99. It'll be available on Amazon, all devices in the Kindle store, so it's well worth it. I mean, $2.99. Take my word for it. It's worth it. It's a quick read. It's a fun read. And also, you know, if there are other people out there that you might like to hear interviewed for a sound-off episode or a sound-off extra, again, it's not really an interview show, but I interview interesting people every now and then when it warrants that I do so, and I enjoy doing it. So if you can think of somebody you would like to hear me talk to here on this show, you can always make a recommendation, email me, send me a tweet, let me know, and we'll see if we can get that set up. It was a lot of fun. Thank you to everybody who used our Audible link this past week. Audible is still running their free 30-day trial. You can get a free audiobook using our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solemonster. If you plug that URL in and you go through the sign-up process, you sign up for a trial, so you are an Audible member for 30 days for free, doesn't cost you anything, you get one free audiobook on us as a gift that you get to cash in. And by the way, if you decide the next day or a week later, hey, I'm not really feeling this, I want to cancel before my 30 days are up, you can go ahead and cancel. You get to keep the book. It's yours. It belongs to you. Your initials have been branded into it for life. Audibletrial.com/solemonster. Every time you sign up, it helps the podcast out just a little bit. The more people we have sign up, the more help it is to the podcast. And again, make sure you put the right link in. It's not audible.com/solemonster. audibletrial.com/solemonster. And spread that around. If you have friends and family, anybody that you think might be interested in an audio book, this is the perfect service for them. If you like what you hear every week, you can make a PayPal donation on thesolemonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. $30 or more will get you not only the nickname and the shout-out, but a very quick shout-out for your own podcast or a YouTube show, business, what have you. You just got to make sure you send the information to me, and it's clearly marked, so I know it's from you. Thank you to Out of Control Cody Thomas, Barbaric Benson Onwuri, CJ, Ring the Bell La Chapelle, Jerome, You're Going Down, Eugenio, Feisty Fred Feltner, No Pain, No Gain, Michael Sanford, Sean, Nasty Boy Nilsson, The Bogota Big Shot, Fernando Leon, Stephen DDT Demoni, Olivia the Vigilante Velez, John Kick to the Head, Now You're Dead Carson, Kelvin Bear Hug Bellow, and Man of Steel, Stelios Stylianou, whose weekly podcast, Shoot the Defense, is hosted by real fans for real fans with regular guest appearances from ex-pro soccer players, journalists, celebrity soccer fans, and more. You can catch episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, the FNX Network, and on shootthedefense.com. And by the way, that's Shoot the Defense with a C, not an S. So thank you to everybody who made a PayPal donation. Keep doing that. Solomonster.com, still the best way to contribute. And don't forget, we have a store, prowrestlingtees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. Nearly 20 different t-shirt designs. We have up to 5XL on all of our shirts, and they ship all over the world. I can't think of a better way to represent the Sound Off in public than with a Sound Off shirt. So you can pick them up there. They are the exclusive seller of Sound Off merchandise, prowrestlingtees.com. Macho Mandow. Let's talk a little bit about this, because I heard from, I think, pretty much everybody who has ever listened to my show ever. That's how many messages I got. Tweets, emails, Facebook messages. I was overwhelmed with messages about this Macho Mandow stuff. Damian Sandow came out at the main event taping on Tuesday night, dressed up as the Macho Man Randy Savage, and right there on the Titantron it said in plain words, Macho Mandow. That is his new gimmick, or I don't know, at least for this week. Who knows if this is going to be a normal thing from here on out. I would think he's going to do it at least a few more times. He wrestled Axel Mania, and then the Ascension came out, so him and Axel may be working together as a new Mega Powers. And like I said, I got flooded with messages. And to be fair, I have to give credit where credit is due. I mentioned this on the Sound Off, the Macho Mandow thing. I mentioned that in response weeks ago to a mailbag question that somebody sent in about, actually it was probably about a month ago. It was Abdul from New Jersey. So if Abdul is listening, and I'm sure he is because he's a regular listener, credit to Abdul. He was the one who pitched the idea. I just happened to mention it on the show. I did use the question. I did mention it. I put it out there. I endorsed it. I laughed. I thought it was a great idea. Because I don't have any faith in this company to do anything with Sandow as a more serious persona. I mean, when he came out a few weeks ago on Raw, he cut that promo. I was a big fan of that promo. I loved it. It felt real. He's very articulate and well-spoken. He had the fans behind him. It's not like people were sitting on their hands or they were chanting, what? Wanting him to go back to doing the Mizdow gimmick. They were very respectful. It was a great promo. And what happened? He wasn't even on TV the next week. So if you have even a modicum of faith in this company to do something with Damian Sandow as a straightforward, serious character, you need to get your head examined, because that's not going to happen. So I accept that. And so Macho Mandow, you know what? It's entertaining. I didn't see it, but I would imagine it's entertaining. Him and Axel together, it could give Axel something to do. It's another team, a fun team maybe to have in the tag team division. I don't have a problem with it. That's why I endorse the idea. But I do find it funny that, you know, we talked about this on the show about a month ago. And I wasn't actually sure they were going to run with the idea, because if you remember when Sandow cut that promo, Axel came out to interrupt him. And I thought, wait a minute, are they actually going to do it? Are they actually going to run with this? And then they had Sandow attack him, and I'm like, well, you know, oh well, wasted opportunity. My hopes were dashed. And then this happened. So again, credit to Abdul for pitching the idea. It was mentioned on the show. And lo and behold, we now have Macho Mandow. So there you go. Want to talk a little bit about the WWE E60 special that aired on ESPN on Tuesday night. I liked this a lot. I thought it was very well done. I have a newfound respect, as I think, I don't see how you can even watch this and not have a newfound respect for Adam Rose, Xavier Woods, and Corey Graves. They were the three NXT stars that were focused on the most. That they had time for anyway in the hour. And a lot of it was taped over the last year, a year ago. I mentioned that to you guys, so if you listen to this podcast, this would not have come as a surprise to you that they would have had a lot of dated footage in this thing. But the big revelation for me in watching it more than anything else, like, you know, Xavier Woods, like in real life and in interviews and stuff, he comes off as a nice guy. So I never thought Xavier Woods, boy, this guy must be a real dick backstage. He came off in the special, as you would expect, as a nice guy. We know about the PhD that he's going for. He's a very bright guy. I'm happy for him that he's, you know, finally found some real success in this company. Corey Graves, we know the situation with him, sidelined with concussions. His career is over, at least in this company. I suppose he could go work somewhere else and they'd let him wrestle, but if he was smart, he would stick to WWE, which is what he's done, and he's an announcer now, and he's carved out a whole new career for himself. And then there's Adam Rose, or the man behind Adam Rose, Ray LaPon is his real name, 35 years old. They gave you the whole backstory of him training to be a wrestler down in South Africa. He was a wrestling fan as a kid. They showed him with Hulk Hogan merchandise, so he's a real fan. And he was a man that was out of chances. You know, he came to WWE, he was doing the Leo Kruger gimmick. Everyone is going gaga this week over Leo Kruger. I was never a fan of the Leo Kruger gimmick. If you go back and listen to those early reviews when I started reviewing NXT 2.5 years ago, I was never a fan of Leo Kruger. Not as a worker, but just the gimmick. I just thought it was boring. It just didn't do anything for me. So now everybody is saying, I hope they bring Leo Kruger back. And even Adam Rose himself on his own Twitter has sent a tweet out saying, you know, retweet for Leo Kruger and favorite this tweet for Adam Rose. And of course, Leo Kruger was winning by a landslide. To me, I say, forget Adam Rose, forget Leo Kruger. I'd like to see and learn more about Ray LaPon. Now, you can't do that with everybody. I'm not saying just turn this into UFC, let everybody use their real name, get rid of gimmicks. Gimmicks have a place in pro wrestling. I just got done talking about Macho Mandel, for crying out loud. Okay, there's a place for funny, silly gimmicks. And some guys will have a better shot of making money and getting over with a gimmick than they would if they were themselves. I get that. But you listen to this guy's story about his kid, and not just about the kid. I'm not saying let's exploit his son, who had issues, and he talked about the medical issues, and it was, you know, it tugged at your heartstrings. It was a great personal story. But I thought his own story, just of a guy who was looking to break through, who wasn't having a lot of luck, who was down on his luck, who was this close from getting cut, and came up with this Adam Rose character, and it worked. I mean, it's a great story, but it's a guy very similar to the Kevin Owens character in NXT. He fights for his family. That's what he said straight up. He fights for his family. That's really what this is all for. It's for his wife. It's for his kids. He's got another kid on the way, I think number three. That's what he fights for. The thing that blew me away, I was not aware of the fact that he has a regular accent. I didn't know that. I've heard the South African accent, but he was talking here in this piece. He sounded like a normal, regular guy. But for him, it worked. You know what I mean? For some reason, I actually like it. I like him better as himself. I like him better as the normal guy who talks normal, looks normal, acts normal, fights for his family. I really think that they could have something with this guy if they play off this special. Have him come out on Raw Monday night, not in the Adam Rose garb, not in the Leo Kruger garb. Let him come out in street clothes. Let him cut a promo the way they let Mizdow cut a promo 3 weeks ago. And let's see where it goes. Because Adam Rose, yeah, he's got the bells and whistles and the Exotic Express, and that's all well and good. You know, when he first debuted at NXT, I was a huge fan of the whole entrance, the whole gimmick. But it got tired real fast, and now, when he actually is on Raw, nobody cares. You could send him out there with 500 people in silly costumes. It wouldn't matter because it's played out. Brodus Clay at first, when he was the Funkasaurus, he made it work. After a while, people didn't care. Because you're like a rat on a wheel or a hamster on a wheel. You're just going in circles. And after a while, it gets boring. It gets old. So I say the answer here is not just let him be Leo Kruger, which they may end up doing that. And if they do it, then they do it. I hope it works out for him. I'm more compelled by Ray LaPon, the man, and his own personal story than I am by any of these other stupid bullshit characters. And you know, somebody made a good point. Somebody emailed me, and they made a very valid point, which is that Triple H likes to talk about how we are in the reality era in WWE, right? This is the reality era. How much of a reality era is it when you have gimmicks like Adam Rose and Stardust, and El Torito, and Corporate Kane, How much of a reality era is it exactly? What makes this a reality era over, say, the Attitude Era? Because the Attitude Era had a lot of bullshit. I wasn't a fan of everything they did and all the characters and the stupid, silly gimmicks in the Attitude Era. But the Attitude Era was a hell of a lot more realistic than the era we're in now. But yet they call it the reality era. CM Punk dropped the pipe bomb and it became the reality era. Maybe, I don't know, maybe for a brief period of time, 5 years ago it was. But now we're in a new era. Let's come up with a new name for this era. Because it sure as hell ain't the reality era. But with a guy like this, maybe it should be. I cared more about Adam Rose when this ESPN documentary was over than I have after all the matches I've ever seen him in on WWE television. I could not have cared less about Adam Rose before Tuesday night. Now, I'm intrigued. I'd like to see more of him. But not in that stupid bullshit gimmick. Now, as far as the rest of the special is concerned, like I said, I enjoyed it. I thought it was very good. I thought it was pretty fair. The funniest moment came when Jeremy Schapp asked Vince McMahon about steroids. And they talked about the wellness policy, and Vince McMahon said, well, everyone is clean. We're way past that now, Vince said. We're way past that now. That, to me, was the laugh-out-loud moment of the entire special. Sure. Sure you are. They also had a funny graphic at the end, because Bill DeMott was all over this special. Again, this was taped many months ago. Bill DeMott was the head trainer at the time. A lot of the Adam Rose story actually revolved around Bill DeMott. Bill DeMott was always there kind of getting on him and telling him, listen, this is what you got to do and you're going to make it. And there's a nice feel-good moment at the end where he debuts as Adam Rose, gets a great reaction. He goes backstage, he hugs Bill DeMott. And Bill DeMott came off very much like he did on that season of Tough Enough when Bill was on there with Austin and Trish and Booker. Because I thought, you know, Bill DeMott, there were times anyway where he came across almost as this kind of hard-edged, fatherly figure in a way. That's kind of how he came off here. And then at the very end, they gave graphics with updates on each of the people, and they flashed the graphic that mentioned, you know, DeMott was fired for being too rough or abusive with people. So it was good. It was good that they included that. WWE had no editorial control whatsoever over the final piece. It was all ESPN, and how can you do a documentary like this and not mention that and not put that in there? So I was happy to see them mention that. If WWE were in control of this, I doubt it would have been mentioned at all. They would have just photoshopped Albert's head onto Bill DeMott's body in all the clips because that's what they love to do. There were two features that made the that actually did not make the documentary. They made the cutting room floor. So they ended up putting them online on the ESPN website. One on Tyler Breeze and one on Colin Cassidy. Tyler Breeze was about 9 minutes long. Matt Clement is his real name. One of the more interesting things is he credits Triple H with having him ditch the mirror when they were going over his very first entrance as Tyler Breeze. Here's another guy who debuted. He was undevelopmental for years. This close from being cut. And they said, listen, you got to think outside the box. You got to come up with an idea of your own here and make it work, because you may not be here much longer if you don't. And he came up with the Tyler Breeze gimmick all on his own, and his idea was, when he walks out to the ring, he would hold up a mirror, a pocket mirror, and look at himself in the mirror. Now, he says that Triple H had a different take on this. Triple H said, listen, the mirror gimmick has been done to death for decades now in wrestling. This is the new generation, the new era, social media and all that kind of stuff, cell phones, smartphones. You got to use a smartphone. Use an iPhone instead. So you take selfies of yourself as you come to the ring. And that's what he did. And the rest is history. That one little change, in retrospect, made a huge difference in the development of that character. And according to him, unless he's just trying to kiss up to his boss and making stuff up, he credits Triple H with being the man responsible for that one little tweak. So that was kind of cool. Colin Cassidy, they had a feature on him. They talked about how he was pre-med at NYU University here in New York. Also played basketball there, which you would have known if you listened to the show, because I mentioned last year, I think at some point, that a friend of my family knew him from playing basketball at NYU. But, you know, he said he didn't have the same passion for medicine and all that kind of stuff that he did for wrestling, and so he chose to pursue his dream. Triple H was ready to cut bait on him. There's a recurring theme here. He was ready to cut bait. Jim Ross, they showed footage of Jim Ross, who at the time was in this big meeting they were having with everybody, Triple H, Michael Cole, the agents, Michael Hayes, who comes off as a real prick. And Jim Ross stuck up for him and said, yeah, he seemed pretty fixated on his size, how big Colin Cassidy was. JR is really big into size. If you listen to him speak and evaluate talent, he's very big on that. Very old school in that way. And that's really what saved him. And he ended up, you know, coming up with his own character. It wasn't just that he was the guy going out there in Enzo Amore's corner and he was kind of glomming all of, you know, Enzo's reactions and cheers from the crowd. He had to be able to stand on his own 2 feet. And I think when Enzo broke his leg and he was gone for 6 months, that period, that six-month period was pivotal in Colin Cassidy's career because there was no Enzo. There was no Enzo. And Enzo, we all know Enzo is great. Not as a wrestler, but with his mouth. He can make a ton of money with his mouth. But Colin Cassidy hadn't shown shit at that point. But he started to develop his own character and his own personality and you know, feel more comfortable in his own skin. By the time Enzo came back, you know, not that I didn't miss the guy, but it was like, all right, well, you know, Colin was already doing well on his own. Now that Enzo's back, it'll just be that much better. So the two of them, I mean, they're so perfect together. That's why I hope they never break them up, or at least not for a while. Eventually, everybody breaks up, unfortunately. That's the reality in wrestling. But I really do think, you know, Colin Cassidy is a guy that can make that company a lot of money. A lot of money. When they bring those two up to the main roster, I really think there's a lot. They have a lot in common with the New Age Outlaws in that the New Age Outlaws were not a top act where you expected them to, you know, wrestle for the world championship. They were a lot better together than they were on their own. They had a certain chemistry that just you can't duplicate that. But the New Age Outlaws, you know, they're going to go into the Hall of Fame one day, right? They had a great career for themselves. All these years later, they still come back and they wrestle. And they still work for the company. They're both agents, and Billy's a trainer. I think, you know, they've turned out pretty well, and they made a shitload of money doing that gimmick. A shitload of money on the indies when they were out of WWE. A shitload of money on t-shirts and video games and all that stuff. And I think Colin and Enzo have that same kind of vibe, and they may end up the same way. And you know what? That's not a bad place for them to be. So the special was great. I would recommend finding a copy of it and watching it. It was very well done. Which leads me to the Roman Reigns special. Roman Reigns, Never Alone, was the new WWE 24 special. These are those half-hour documentaries they do on the network. And this one was all about Roman's journey to WrestleMania, his whole day, the aftermath. I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. I watched this after I watched the ESPN piece. So this one was not as, I don't know, it was not as strong. And the ESPN piece was an hour. This was half an hour. This also just focused on one guy as opposed to focusing on an entire system of guys. I thought it was well done. The point that really, I just couldn't believe it when I saw it. They showed the WrestleMania finish. Right, so they show the ending of the WrestleMania main event, where Rollins wins the championship and Roman is a loser. And instead of just airing the finish as it originally aired, they went out of their way. They went to absurd lengths to erase the curb stomp. They actually Benoit'd the curb stomp in this documentary. They can't even show the move in the main event of WrestleMania that just happened a little over a month ago, 5 weeks ago. I mean, I haven't gone back to check in the archives on the network if they've edited it out of the actual WrestleMania airing that's on the network. I mean, I hope they didn't do that. Maybe somebody can check it out and let me know. That, to me, would be just absolutely going overboard. This was already going overboard. I mean, this is ridiculous. What is the problem with airing the footage of the finish to a match that just aired a few weeks ago? Who cares? You want to block the move because it's unsafe and people are filing lawsuits left and right, and so from here on out, we're not going to let this person take his boot and drive his opponent's head into the mat. Okay, if that's your decision, then fine. Maybe they'll bring the curb stomp back. Maybe when the heat dies down and these lawsuits go away, we may see the return of the curb stomp. But to go back and actively edit it that way, it's just completely ludicrous to me. It is so stupid. They're showing the very end of the match. Brock has Seth up on his shoulders for the F5. Here comes Roman for the spear. Roman is down. Seth comes off the ropes, and as he jumps off the ropes, what do we see? We see some kid in the crowd with his jaw open like he saw a pair of titties for the first time. Are you shitting me? And then magically, I guess the power of the titty knocked over Roman Reigns. He couldn't believe it. That must have been a pretty impressive pair of boobs there. And Seth Rollins gets the pin and wins the championship. Victory by boob, I guess. I don't know. It was left up to your imagination. I just saw it, and the edit could not have been more obvious. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one. Maybe I'm making more of this than I should. I just think the whole thing is stupid. Like, you want to ban the move, fine, but, I mean, was that really necessary? I'll answer my own question. No. No, it was not necessary. And when this special was over, I actually, you know, Roman Reigns, I like Roman Reigns. I'm a Roman Reigns fan. Not everybody is. I like the guy. I get the sense that outside the ring, he's even more likable than the Roman Reigns we see on television, especially the one we hear in promos on television, although his promos have gotten better. But when this was over, I was like, man, this, you know, I like this guy. I already liked him anyway. But again, it's the sort of thing like you would ask yourself, why wouldn't this air before WrestleMania? If you think about this in the context of any other sport, boxing, mixed martial arts, this sort of thing would air typically to promote and hype up a fight, not after the fact. Now, it would have changed the whole concept of the special because they wouldn't have been able to follow him around at the stadium for WrestleMania, show the finish of the match, the aftermath of the match with him hugging his family backstage, all upset. So they would have had to come up with a different storyline, follow him around maybe while he's training for the match, follow him to his house if you want to show him hanging out with his family, whatever. Yeah, you would have had to approach it a little bit differently. But maybe that would have helped. Maybe that, I mean, he was still going to get booed by a large number of people, but maybe it wouldn't have been as bad. You know, it made the guy seem very likable. I just don't understand why a lot of these things, they don't air them until months later, or weeks later, after the fact, when it's already too late. Tough Enough is coming up on June 23rd, USA Network. That is the premiere date. We found out the names of the hosts and the trainers and the judges. This week, we found out a lot. Chris Jericho and Renee Young will be your hosts. Jericho is doing quite well for himself these days, picking up Steve Austin scraps. Booker T, Billy Gunn, and Lita. I like saying it the way Kane used to say. Remember when they did the Kane-Lita storyline? He'd be like, Lita. It's not Lita, it's Lita. That's what I call her. So Booker T, Billy Gunn, and Lita will be the trainers, while Hulk Hogan, Daniel Bryan, and Paige will be the judges. Initially, I thought that they were the trainers. I misunderstood. The idea of Hulk Hogan as a trainer on Tough Enough is just comical for so many reasons. But I see people crapping on Hogan having anything to do with this show, even though he's just a judge. People are like railing the decision. I'm going to defend Hogan on this because I don't care what you think of Hulk Hogan. Given his place and given his success, however he achieved it in wrestling as arguably the biggest name in the history of wrestling, okay? A name more recognizable than maybe any other except Dwayne Johnson, okay? That's a pretty good career. I would think he has a place somewhere on the show, as long as he doesn't have to get physical. So I kind of like the idea of having the trainers who teach them, you know, the mechanics and the physical stuff that they have to, and they evaluate them on that. And then you have somebody like Hulk Hogan who maybe is going to evaluate them on their personality, their promos, their whole character. You know, what Daniel Bryan might look for in a WWE star is going to be very different than what somebody like Hulk Hogan would look for. So to go from Hogan to Bryan to Paige, I don't know, I think that's a nice mix. And USA wants this show to be a success. Hulk Hogan has a name. He has a profile. I wouldn't be surprised if it was USA Network who went to WWE and said, hey, we want Hogan. Fans are going to be able to vote via text message on the contestants they think should stay each week, which one should be voted off. They don't explain how much sway the fan vote will actually have on who stays and who goes, though, so that's the problem. The show is going to be taped out of the Performance Center in the NXT Arena at Full Sail University. The winners, one man and one woman, will each earn themselves a one-year WWE contract valued at $250,000. My advice, if you're trying out for Tough Enough and you are lucky enough to make it on the show, get your friends to vote you off second or third from last. Be a runner-up. runner-ups have a better chance than the winners usually do at having a long career in the company. Josh Matthews was a runner-up, and he got 13 years out of it, right? Miz was a runner-up. He's still with the company. Where's the winner? Nowhere to be found. Ariane was the first person eliminated from that last season of Tough Enough. You know, Melina versus Alicia Fox, she said. Let us not forget that. Do you realize she is the only surviving member of that cast still under contract to WWE? And she was the first one eliminated. Where's the winner? Where's Big Andy at? Not working for WWE. In fact, he never even made his debut. I think he's working down in Puerto Rico now, or at least he was. You know, meanwhile, Son of Havoc and Ivelisse, who were also on that show, they're kicking ass in Lucha Underground. And now they've got Marty the Moth also. So take my advice. Get yourself voted off near the end. And trust me, if you're good enough, you will get a contract out of it no matter what. Whether it's with WWE or somebody else will come calling. You don't have to win. Just get yourself noticed. And if WWE doesn't give you a contract, some other promotion will. But you don't want to win the entire thing. It's like a curse. Not only that, you'll end up with massive heat in the WWE locker room. Read JTG's book if you want to learn more about heat. Speaking of Hulk Hogan, I have to mention this. He was down under in Australia earlier in the week doing media ahead of the WWE tour. He's going to be the general manager. So all of you Aussie fans are going to get to see Hulk Hogan live. He spoke with the Herald Sun newspaper in Melbourne and added yet another fantastic bullshit story to his legendary list of fantastic bullshit stories. This time, the subject of UFC came up. Hogan, who says he thinks UFC is too violent, claims that he turned down the chance to compete in UFC in its infancy. Bet you didn't know that. Neither did UFC, apparently. He said, we looked at it. It was very violent. The referees weren't stopping the matches, and they were letting guys get beat up when they should have been stopped. So we just didn't want to have any part of it, but it's become quite a phenomenon. You don't say. Now, he says this, and Campbell McLaren, who was one of the founding fathers of UFC, had this to say on Twitter. He said, I call bullshit on Hulk Hogan. I never wanted him in the original UFC. Who did he talk to? Not me. Hulk Hogan being asked to fight in UFC is absolutely false. Not in real life, anyway. And then in a separate tweet to Joe Rogan, McLaren was on a roll here. Hogan, I guess the Hogan stuff got him all fired up. He sent a tweet to Joe Rogan and said, nobody asked him bullshit if he says any different. So there you have it. Another disputed claim from the Hulkster. Reminds me of that time he said the role of Randy the Ram and the Wrestler was meant for him, but he turned it down fearing that his star power would distract from the film. That's what he said. I'm too big of a star. It will ruin your movie. Go ahead and give it to Mickey Rourke. To which Darren Aronofsky, the director, when he got wind of this, he said Hogan was full of shit, and they never, not even once, did they consider him for the role. So, God bless the Hulkster. I hope he never changes. Raw from this past Monday night was live up north from Montreal, Canada. This was a very good show. It was highlighted by two great segments, an excellent pay-per-view caliber match between Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, and the debut, even though it was not really his Raw debut, but they were pretending that it is, or was, of Sami Zayn in his home city of Montreal, introduced by Bret the Hitman Hart to answer the John Cena Open Challenge for the United States Championship. You know, to be introduced on Raw in your hometown by Bret the Hitman Hart for a championship match against John Cena, I'd call that a career highlight. I don't care who you are or how many years you've had in the business, that right there is a moment in your career. The biggest moment of his career, bigger than any Ring of Honor match or any other indie match in front of 200 people or any NXT, even winning the NXT championship. Nothing was bigger for this guy than this moment to be introduced in front of 15,000 or 10,000 people, however many it was, in his home city, getting that kind of reaction. Bret Hart's there to shake your hand. You're wrestling the biggest star in the company. There's a title on the line. I mean, come on. Come on. It doesn't get any bigger than that. And I didn't think the show could get any better than Randy Orton bopping his head to the New Day's theme music in the opening segment, but it actually did. Orton and Roman Reigns wrestled New Day in the opener, and believe it or not, champs were not chumps. They did not destroy the tag team champions like they normally do on this show. Reigns accidentally speared Orton, and Kofi Kingston got the pin on Randy Orton. I said it took 6 years for Kingston to get his revenge on Orton. That's what I said on Twitter, but a bunch of you tweeted me to let me know that Kofi pinned Orton on Raw last year. I think he rolled him up. I have no recollection of this at all. I don't know how you have a recollection of that at all, and I know I remember everything, but I don't have any memory of that. But, you know, can you blame me? Can you blame me? 90% of this show is missable on most weeks. It's 3 hours. All the stuff that I remember from those one-hour Raws and those two-hour Raws from like 10, 15, 20 years ago. With these three-hour shows, I got news for you. Even the newer fans, okay, who are going to grow up on this, I'm telling you right now, you guys aren't going to remember shit 10 years from now unless it was like a big deal. Some stupid mid-card angle on Raw in 2015, you're not going to remember shit when 2024 rolls around because there's just, it's too long. There's too much stuff. It's impossible. Impossible for people to remember everything that happens on this show. I wouldn't even believe you if you would have told me that had I not seen a photo of Kofi rolling up Randy. So I'll take your word for it that it actually did happen. But anyway, this led to Kane booking Orton versus Reigns in the main event. Ryback did an interview in the ring with Renee Young. I'm not even sure why the hell she was in the ring. As soon as she asked the first question, Ryback took the mic. She just stood there. She never did anything again. I don't think so. Maybe I'm misremembering here. But he took the mic. It was a condensed version of the same interview that he did months ago when they were building to a feud with Rusev. And then they just dropped it. What a disappointment that turned out to be. Fans were out here chanting Goldberg at him because they're stupid. First time in a while they've done that. He acknowledged the Goldberg chants. He actually acknowledged it because he said, if you don't, they'll just keep doing it. And he was right. They suddenly started to chant, feed me more. So Ryback knows pro wrestling. He's a very smart guy. Bray Wyatt appeared on the Titantron. He cut the usual Bray Wyatt promo. You can pretty much take this Wyatt promo and apply it to any feud that he has ever been in. These promos are growing very tiresome for me. I've been a Bray Wyatt supporter for a long time. Still am. And it's getting harder and harder to defend these because he never changes it up. I know it's the character, but you've got to change things up. That's one of the reasons I was in such favor of taking Bo Dallas and putting him together with his brother, whether you acknowledge that they're brothers or not, and making him almost like a Wyatt disciple or a Wyatt lackey. Maybe bringing a little bit of humor into it, just a little bit. I'd be okay with that. And look, more often than not, I'm in favor of like serious, this is the kind of character they should do. There's too much comedy in wrestling, which there is. But I think in that case, it might actually work. At least it would be different. The only issue there is, again, it would turn Wyatt babyface, and I don't think they want to turn him babyface just yet. But these freaking promos, I mean, he delivers them well, but I just don't care. I tune them out. It's the same shit every week. So he's got to do something. I mean, I know they give him a lot of freedom and liberty when it comes to his own promos, so I'm blaming him. I'm putting the blame squarely on him. He's got to do something just to shake things up a little bit. Tyson Kidd and Cesaro beat the Ascension with their giant swing into a dropkick finish. Cesaro did 20 consecutive European uppercuts to Victor. Poor Victor, bouncing him from one corner to the other as the crowd chanted along. They counted along this whole time. All 20 of them. This was awesome. Kidd and Cesaro are just, they're perfect. Perfect together. Then we had Rollins versus Ambrose. If Ambrose wins, he is in the main event at Payback. That was per Kane's stipulation. So, of course, Rollins was not happy about that. An excellent match. This should have been the main event at Payback. That's how good this match was. They should have just done Rollins and Ambrose for the championship at Payback. They started the feud 8 months ago, 9 months ago, whatever it was. They never gave it a proper conclusion. Ambrose never got his revenge. And what this match showed is that there is still life in that feud. These two guys are so good that you put them together, you put them in the ring for 15 minutes, you let them do their thing, they will bring the people into it. People were clamoring to see Ambrose win this match. Can you imagine if the championship was on the line? You don't have to worry about triple threats and fatal four-ways and ladder matches and strap matches and Russian chain matches and a fucking, you know, a wrench match. And how about a spatula match? You don't have to worry about any of that stuff. Just have Rollins, Ambrose, championship. That's it. That's all you got to do. This is not complicated stuff. So this was a pay-per-view worthy match right in the middle of the show. Rollins gave Ambrose a running powerbomb into the barricade outside near the finish. They teased that Ambrose might get counted out. Of course, he made it back in just in the nick of time. Ambrose hit his little Nigel McGuinness ricochet off the ropes clothesline. Rollins, in taking it, took a hell of a bump. He took an Okada Rainmaker-esque bump right, I thought, on his neck. I thought he landed right on top of his head. And they showed the replay in slow-mo. He landed right on his shoulder. Looked very nasty. WWE has been having some tough luck with shoulders of late, so they are very fortunate their champion did not injure his. J&J security ran down for the distraction, which ended up with Ambrose rolling up Rollins for the pin. The first distraction roll-up on this show in weeks. So that brings the total number this year to 11, which actually isn't that bad. Ambrose is now officially in the main event at Payback. It is now a fatal four-way for the WWE Championship. Now, make no mistake about it, Ambrose was added to that match so that he could be the one to take the losing fall when Seth Rollins retains. There's no doubt in my mind that's the only reason they added him to this match. But still, I think it'll make the match that much better, and I like the fact that Ambrose is in the championship main event. That's where he belongs. It's about time. I mean, his pay-per-view win streak will absolutely end at one. You know, he beat Harper at Extreme Rules. That's where it ends. He is not winning this match, but I still like the fact that they've added him to it. I think it'll make it a much better match. And I don't see them doing a Shield reunion. I see people, Rollins and Ambrose and Reigns. This is the first time all three of them are in a match together. And poor Randy Orton is the odd man out. Maybe they're going to do a turn. I know that's what a lot of people are hoping for. I don't see them doing a Shield reunion yet. They absolutely will, possibly even by the end of this year. But they're not doing it here. I know people are hoping against hope, but not going to happen. I just do not see it happening. They may do. Now, this I can see them doing. They may do the old triple powerbomb spot during the match. Maybe for a moment there, the three of them put their differences aside and they want to take out Randy Orton. So they hoist him up and they slam him down, and then it becomes, for a few minutes, a triple threat with the Shield guys. I could absolutely see them doing that spot. We may see a powerbomb at the pay-per-view. I expect it. But they're not going to do some big-time swerve where all three of them turn. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Why would that even make sense? Rollins, he's been hated by everybody on the roster. He's the champion. He has the title. Reigns wants the belt. He got fucked over at WrestleMania. Why, if you're Roman Reigns, okay, a month and a half later, after being embarrassed in the main event of WrestleMania with your family at ringside by this guy, all of a sudden you're going to align yourself with him? It just doesn't make sense. Okay, put your thinking caps on for a second. And when you really stop and think about this, there ain't going to be no turn. Now, as far as the Shield, could Dean Ambrose turn heel? Also doesn't really make sense, but they really could use a new heel. You know, Rollins and Kane and Rusev. I mean, what other heels are? You got Wyatt. They're not doing much with Bray Wyatt right now. They really could use a new heel. On the heel side, they're very short on heels. I'm not even sure who they could promote from NXT as a heel. You know, if they promote anybody from NXT, it would be somebody like Zayn or Finn Balor, and they're baby faces. I don't think they should be heels. So I don't necessarily think it's impossible to think somebody would turn. It just doesn't make sense to me, though. I just don't see it making sense. They'd have to come up with a hell of an explanation. But you know what they would do? This is what they've done before. Here's what they would do. They would turn somebody, and I would be waiting for that hell of an explanation. And what they would do, because they don't know what the fuck the explanation is, they would just have the guy, they would book the guy to come out on Raw the next night and be like, well, I don't have to tell you why I did what I did. And then they'll walk away. That's what you call a cop-out. We've seen them do that before. I hope they don't go in that direction. We have the John Cena Open Challenge for the U.S. Championship. Bret the Hitman Hart comes on out in Montreal, gets a big pop. I think Bret Hart has, I think he's been to Montreal a few times. Nice city. He was actually there for Pat Patterson Appreciation Night, which took place after the show, and for some odd reason did not air on the network. I have no idea why they wouldn't have aired that on the network, but they didn't. They had tried to do Patterson Appreciation Night, if you remember, about 3 years ago in Montreal. Bret Hart was there for that as well. That was the same night, though, that Jerry Lawler had his heart attack. And it was touch and go for a while there with him, and obviously they canceled it because it wouldn't have been appropriate to go on with the celebration. So that's why it took 3 years for them to reschedule this. Heath Slater, as Bret Hart was preparing to introduce Cena's opponent, Heath Slater came on out, got in the ring. Bret bopped him on the head with the mic, knocked him out. So that was the end of Heath Slater. I love how every single time Bret Hart has to do something physical, 9 times out of 10, if you really pay attention, it was always Heath Slater. That's how much trust the company and Bret Hart has in Heath Slater. So when you ask yourself, why do they keep somebody like Heath Slater around, right? They fired all the other members of Three Man Band, but they keep this guy. Why? I mean, on the one hand, you need to have a job guy, right, who can do the honors for the newer guys, but they have a lot of faith and trust in him. You can tell just by the way they use him. I mean, look at somebody like Axel. I mean, Axel, when The Rock came back, I don't know if The Rock handpicked him or if the company recommended him. The Rock may have gone to WWE and said, listen, who do you recommend I train with that's safe? And they recommended Curtis Axel. So when he was getting ready to come back in 2011, you know, who was Rock in the ring practicing with? It was frickin' Curtis Axel. I think even Curt Hawkins maybe was also, might have been training with The Rock as well. So there are some guys like that they really have a lot of faith and trust in. Go back to 2010, the same year Bret Hart came back. Bret got a little physical. That summer, he was part of the big SummerSlam match, John Cena, his team against the Nexus. Go back and watch all of the physical angles that took place with the Nexus and those guys on Raw, and then the pay-per-view match itself at SummerSlam. It was always Heath Slater. Heath Slater was the guy from the Nexus, the one guy that Bret, if he had to do anything physical with, because he couldn't take bumps, it was always Heath Slater. Always. So there's a reason for that. So all these years later, what is it now, 5 years later now, 4.5 years later, here's Heath Slater once again working with Bret Hart. I'm sure it's a thrill for him. So we had Bret Hart has disposed of poor Heath Slater, and he introduces a hometown boy, that being Sami Zayn. Place goes nuts. As soon as he mentioned Sami's name, and I had people who listened to this podcast who were in the building, and before any of this happened, they were tweeting me saying, everyone's chanting for Sami Zayn, everybody wants him and expects him and hopes that he comes out for the open challenge. So people were waiting for this. They were hoping against hope it would be Sami Zayn, and they were not disappointed. So he came out. Unfortunately, it's not all a happy story for poor Sami Zayn, because he got a little too exuberant during his entrance. He came out, before he even set foot inside the ring, he got up on the ring steps and started throwing his arms very violently into the air, waving for the fans to get louder and louder. And in doing so, he was so violent in the way that he threw up his arms that he actually injured his shoulder. He injured his shoulder. The belief, and I have not heard what the results are yet. This is a legitimate injury, by the way. This is not part of the storyline. This was not done to make him look better in defeat. He was really hurt. The doctor came in shortly after the match started to check on him. This went on for about 60 seconds. Sammy's like, I'm okay, I can do this. And he went and he wrestled the next 10 minutes. He did a dive out of the ring. I mean, he did a lot of his signature moves, the Blue Thunderbomb. You would never know anything was wrong. They sent him for an MRI. Again, I haven't seen anything about the results. The rumor, the scuttlebutt, was it may be a torn rotator cuff. We'll find out soon enough. If it is any significant injury, whether it's a tear or not, that would mean he is out. There will be no match with Kevin Owens at NXT TakeOver. This could not have come at a worse time for the guy. He got hurt posing for the crowd. He got hurt before he ever set foot in the ring. How does something like that even happen? But it did. It's one of those freak things that happens. Now, he was already having shoulder issues. I don't know if it was with that shoulder. I would think it probably was. That's why he's been out for a long time. He only recently came back. You know, he wasn't just out selling the beatdown that Kevin Owens gave him 3 months ago. He had some kind of minor shoulder injury that he was rehabbing and recovering from. So I guess it wouldn't be so shocking to find out that it was the same shoulder. And now he just went and completely, you know, fucked it up. I hope not, but it's not looking too good. The match itself, it was not that good. It was not the usual Sami Zayn match. I'm sure the injury had a lot to do with that, even though, again, you would watch the match and you would never know. I mean, he would favor it every now and then, but he was doing all of his moves. And the fact that also these two were working together for the first time, to my knowledge, we've never seen a Sami Zayn-John Cena match before. And John Cena's not exactly, I mean, John Cena, when John Cena is in there with a good worker on a big stage, like a pay-per-view main event, John Cena will go out there and will have classic matches. John Cena has been part of some of the best matches in WWE in the last 10 years. People may not want to hear that, but it's true. I've always given him credit for that. But he's got to be in there with the right opponent. If you put Cena in there with, I don't know. I mean, look at the recent matches with Rusev, right? There's nothing special about these matches. Rusev is a pretty good worker. Cena and Rusev have had better matches than the last one they had. That stipulation didn't really help them. But, you know, I mean, there's nothing overly special about them. But if you put John Cena in there with CM Punk, I mean, those two guys had classic matches. You put John Cena in there with Daniel Bryan, they had a great match at SummerSlam. John Cena and Brock Lesnar, they also, not all of them, but, you know, that Extreme Rules match, that was a whole spectacle a few years ago. Cena in there with the right opponent can have a great, great match. It just was not meant to be on this night. I hope that 2-3 years down the road, we'll be talking about another John Cena, Sami Zayn match, and it'll be a fucking 4-star match on pay-per-view. This was not. This was not anywhere close to that. Some sloppy moves. When this was over, Zayn had, he did kick out of an AA, which was huge. You know, he's like the rookie coming up to the main roster. And on night one, he kicked out of John Cena's finishing maneuver. So that is a big deal. And he put up a hell of a fight before Cena finished him off with a crappy springboard stunner. That move looked like such shit. I wish he would stop doing it. It's just, it's a disgrace. And another attitude adjustment, and Cena got the win. Cena helped him up after the match. He left the ring so that Sami Zayn could, you know, soak up the cheers of the crowd. I thought that was also very cool. Place gave him a standing ovation. This was a textbook example of how to get a new guy over. I don't want to hear that, oh, Cena beat him, Cena buries another one. This was exactly how it should be done. And what's surprising to me is that I read now that this was not supposed to be Sami Zayn's big Raw debut, like permanent Raw debut. He was supposed to wrestle again on SmackDown the next night. Obviously, he didn't because he was hurt. He went for an MRI. But these appearances were designed just to promote TakeOver. There was no plan for him to now be on the main roster. See, that, I think that would have been a mistake. You have a debut like the one he had against John Cena. Okay, it was a very John Cena-esque debut, right? Because, I mean, that's really what this was. They followed the same formula they used to debut John Cena on SmackDown back in 2002. Kurt Angle issues an open challenge. Out comes the new guy. New guy looks good. Gives the veteran a competitive match. Falls short in the end. Right? How is that burying somebody? Pipe down with that nonsense. I'm tired of hearing about that. But if they were going to just take him off television and put him right back down on NXT and not bring him back to the main roster for another 3 months, then that's pretty stupid. You know, that's a wasted opportunity. You don't give somebody a debut like this if you don't have plans to bring, for good, to bring them up to the main roster. And if that wasn't the plan, that's pretty stupid. Naomi and the returning Tamina are now a unit. They jumped the Bella Twins from behind on their way to the ring and laid them out. Naomi was a dead ringer for Awesome Kong. If Kong dropped, I said about 50 pounds on Twitter, but some of you said it's probably closer to 150 pounds. I was trying to be more diplomatic about it. You're probably right. I was just keeping in mind it's, you know, when you make fun of a woman's weight, you're treading on dangerous ground, especially one who could kick your ass. It's never a good idea to do something like that. King Barrett, former King Sheamus, teamed up. They beat Dolph Ziggler and the new sensation, Neville, when Barrett laid out Neville with the bullhammer. I'm not panicking. I'm not panicking yet. A few more losses like this for Neville, and I will. But I'm not panicking yet. He's still doing okay. Reigns and Orton went to a no contest in the main event when the Authority interfered. The babyfaces tried to fight them off, but the odds were not in their favor. until Dean Ambrose ran out for the save after Reigns speared Rollins. Orton then laid out Roman Reigns with an RKO, and Ambrose laid out Orton with dirty deeds, and Dean Ambrose was the last man standing as the show went off the air. I don't see how anybody can complain too much about a show featuring that Ambrose-Rollins match and the Cena Open Challenge stuff. That made the whole show for me. So I give Raw this week a thumbs up. Good stuff.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Hideo Itami has reportedly suffered a major shoulder injury. I'm not sure how or when the injury took place, but reports are that it will require surgery and could put him on the shelf for up to 8 months. That sucks. That really sucks. The guy had so much momentum coming out of that WrestleMania special. You just wanted to see him succeed. And between, you know, his shoulder injury and Sami Zayn's shoulder injury, it's just a disastrous situation now for NXT. And what I fear is, you know, rightly or wrongly, it sends the message to Vince McMahon and to Triple H, but especially Vince, that, hey, these indie guys that have mileage on their bodies and they're already in their 30s, they're not worth it. They're not worth the investment because their bodies are going to break down faster. You know, guys like Zayn and Itami and Balor and Owens, those are the guys that carry that NXT brand. Those guys are the reason that NXT has the sort of buzz that it has. They're the reason that NXT can tour Ohio and Pennsylvania and pack 3,000 to 4,000 seat buildings. I like what Triple H is doing with NXT, and I hope it continues. But ultimately, it's the old, you know, it's the old situation where it doesn't matter what you think unless you are the old man sitting on his throne, and the old man on his throne is Vince McMahon. And his opinion ultimately is the only one that matters, because once these guys are promoted to the main roster, if he doesn't have the confidence in them, it's over. It's over before it even started. You know, and I'm not even saying that Vince is 100% wrong in thinking that. Look at Daniel Bryan. Look at how his body has all of a sudden betrayed him over the last year. And that's after years and years and years of beating his body to shreds on the independent scene in Japan, all over the world, before he even landed in WWE. You know, you have a 10-year career, a 12-year career, taking bumps and doing dives and all the crazy stuff that these guys do. It's going to take a toll. You know, now Bryan, finally, he's a made man, and he's has the chance to make a shitload of money now, and his career is in jeopardy. But that doesn't mean that these guys aren't worth taking a chance on, because if they don't get hurt and it pays off, they can carry your company and make all of the less experienced guys that work with them that much better. And those guys that will work with the Daniel Bryans and will work with the Sami Zayns and those kind of guys, okay, those guys are the ones that you are going to have to rely on to carry your company for the next 10 to 15 years. Who are those guys going to learn from? You know, we could put him in the ring with other guys who have about as much experience as they do. Oh, that's going to work real well. That's why you need guys like this. That's why I really hope they get Samoa Joe in there next month. That's the new rumor is that Joe is going to NXT in June. I really hope they get him in there. And also why I hope they give a big mega push to UHA Nation. UHA Nation, they debuted him on NXT this week in a backstage segment. He signed his NXT contract in William Regal's office. They played a great music video hyping him up, showing him, you know, walking into the performance center and getting himself all pumped up and everything. They never did tell us his name, because apparently they have not decided what UHA Nation's name in WWE is going to be. It certainly will not be UHA Nation. But it just said, you know, coming soon. They wouldn't even give us a name. That's because they don't even know what the name is. And I'm hoping that the fact they seem to be rushing him onto TV, because he only first reported, I think, to the Performance Center maybe like a month ago. That's pretty quick. I mean, there are guys that spend months and sometimes years without even making it to NXT television, let alone Raw or SmackDown. So they must see something in him. If you've seen his indie work, again, I'm not as familiar with it as some of you guys might be, but I have seen some of his matches, and the guy is amazing. He is an amazing guy, and I really think, I mean, UHA Nation, not to take anything away from Big E, because I think Big E is also better than what they're doing with him, but I think this guy here could very well be the first, you know, black, fully black, because some people still don't accept The Rock, which I think is stupid, but, you know, again, there are African-American fans. I've had this conversation with them before. We've talked about this in the Facebook group. There are some of them who don't recognize The Rock as being the first black WWE champion. Now, I'm not black, okay? They are. So who am I to say, well, that's a stupid thing to say. Rock is part black. He was the WWE. He was one of the greatest superstars they ever had. I don't see how you can ignore that. You can say, well, we haven't had one since, you know, or that it's only been The Rock, and that's pathetic, and I would agree with you. But you can't just ignore, The Rock. To me, that is stupid. I look at a guy like UHA Nation, and I say to myself, this could be the guy. This could be the guy. If there is a racist bone in anybody's body backstage in WWE, if there really is somebody who works there that has a racist bone in their body, no matter how hard they may try, this guy is talented enough, I think, to overcome that. And for Vince McMahon to look at him and see dollar signs. So if he stays healthy and doesn't spend a gazillion years in NXT and they promote him to the main roster and they don't, you know, slow him down and make him change who he is, the sky's the limit with this guy. And I'm happy to see them kind of rushing him onto TV because, you know, I know when they put that vignette together, they didn't know that a Tommy was hurt. I don't think, unless they inserted it late into the show, which actually is very possible. Maybe it was a panic move. You know, who knows? But I was happy to see it. What this means for TakeOver on May 20th is anyone's guess. The most logical thing to do if a Tommy and Zayn cannot go is to make Finn Balor and Tyler Breeze a singles match. Originally, it was going to be Balor, Breeze, and a Tommy for the number one contendership. So, you know, you don't have to replace a Tommy with anybody. Just make it a singles match between Balor and Breeze, and they'll probably have a hell of a match. That could be for the number one contendership. The winner could then meet Kevin Owens at the end of the show for the championship. So you could do Balor versus Owens on the 20th in the main event. To be honest with you, what I think would be best for business, so to speak, would be to go with Balor and Breeze. Okay, do that match. But instead of blowing it off at the end of the show, you have Kevin Owens come out at the end of the show. And he forces the referee to count Sami Zayn out because Sami Zayn's hurt. He can't go. Maybe he's not even there. So he forces the referee to start counting. And all of a sudden, Joe shows up. Samoa Joe as a surprise and the place goes crazy. You do Joe in his debut against Owens. Doesn't even have to be a title match. It could just be them, you know, going up against each other one-on-one. I know Joe is still doing indie dates through the end of May, but if they could swing it, if they can go to him, if he is coming in and say, listen, we need you a little bit earlier, maybe we could work something out here, that, I think, would be the way to go. And that would make people probably, in all honesty, at least for a moment, it would make them forget about Hideo Itami and Sami Zayn very fast if Samoa Joe showed up. And then they could let him finish out his dates. I know that's not what WWE typically does, but if he's got another one or two indie dates to do and doesn't want to break his word and cancel, you know, you bring him in a takeover, he makes his big debut, let him work those last couple of indie shows. Let him fulfill his obligations, and then he's all yours. Then he could start full-time after that. That, I think, would be the way to go. But if not, you have Balor beat Breeze, and then you do Balor and Owens. I mean, to me, that's probably the most likely scenario that they're going to go with. You know, this week's episode coming up on Wednesday night of NXT has Tyler Breeze and Adam Rose in a tag team match against Finn Balor and Hideo Itami, and they're having a face-off between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, so I would imagine they will wait until after that episode airs before they formally announce anything related to their status. They'll probably wait until after that and then put something up on .com. As far as this week's show, this past Wednesday night, we had Charlotte beating Emma in the opener, the new evil Emma. She comes out, she teases doing all the usual stuff she would do in her entrance, and then she doesn't do it. Easy way to get heel heat. Unfortunately for her, nobody cares anymore. So even though she's trying to be a heel, she's been so insignificant for so long, and the one thing that she had going for her, which was that gimmick and that character, at least at Full Sail, people still cared. Now they don't even care about her at Full Sail. So that's what's kind of sad, because Emma's, she's a really good worker, and she's a lot better than I think the way she's been treated. And I hope it works out. I hope the heel turn ends up working out for her in the end, because if not, I worry about her status the next time they have some cuts, and that would be a shame. But Charlotte beat Emma. When the match was over, Bailey came down. She teased that she... Actually, she didn't tease it. She started to hug Emma, and I knew exactly what was coming next. Turned into a belly-to-Bailey suplex, and then she took back her headband and her shirt that Emma had stolen. Apparently, that's the only shirt and headband they had made for Bailey. Poor Bailey, she only had one of each, so she took them back. We had two sit-down interviews, pre-recorded sit-down interviews with Michael Cole, conducted with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. First one was with Owens. Michael Cole got really sassy with Kevin Owens. He couldn't believe that he would do what he did to his best friend. He wanted to know why. Kevin Owens kept repeating, you know, I do this for my family. And then he started to get more agitated as time went on. He was saying, I know what you're trying to do. You're a journalist. You're a real journalist. You're trying to make headlines with this interview. And Kevin Owens wasn't taking the bait. So later on, he sat down, Michael Cole did, with Sami Zayn and asked him about what Kevin Owens had done to him. And Sami Zayn says, yeah, I would love to know why he did what he did. I still don't know why he did what he did. Because they also talked about the fact, I think, that Zayn was his best man at his wedding. I mean, they really made it personal. And they can't figure out why Kevin Owens did. They don't buy the excuse, well, I did it for my family. They think there's something else. They think that Kevin Owens is jealous. And Sami Zayn said, look, I already have you at TakeOver. We're going to have a match. I'm going to get my revenge. I'm going to get my belt back. I'm going to show up on NXT next week. No violence. No aggression, no attacks. I want you to look me in the eye in the middle of the ring, and I want you to tell me why. Why did you do what you did? So that was it. Those are the two sit-down interviews. I thought they were very well done. I think having Cole do them as opposed to like Byron Saxton or whatever the hell that other guy's, the new guy, he was the ring announcer this week. He sucked. He was terrible. But they had Michael Cole do it, and so because he is the voice of the company, it made it feel that much more special. I can't really say that very often about anything Michael Cole does because he's so overexposed. I mean, he's the voice of Raw. He's the voice of SmackDown. I think he even does main events sometimes. I mean, he's everywhere, you know? So hearing Michael Cole's voice, it's more like nails on a chalkboard. It doesn't really, make me think, oh, this is going to be special. But on this show it did, because they don't usually have him doing these interviews, and I thought it worked. Unfortunately, it may all be for nothing. It may be to set up a match that isn't even going to happen. So it makes me sad now just thinking about this. Rhino, Gord, Bull Dempsey, and pinned him. Not much to it. Then he challenged Baron Corbin to a match at TakeOver to a surprisingly big reaction when he said that. We had the UHA Nation segment where he met Regal for the first time, signed his contract, and had the music video treatment. Dash Wilder and Scott Dawson, or as I like to call them, Team Who. They were supposed to go up against Kaz and Enzo. They played the music. They didn't come out. They played the music again. They didn't come out. They sent the camera backstage, and we saw the tag team champions, Blake and Murphy. They were kicking their ass while Carmella was annoyingly yelling at them to stop. We had a contract signing for the Women's Championship match at TakeOver. Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch out there with Commissioner William Regal. Becky cut a babyface promo. Really, that's what it was. Talking about how everything she had been through led her to this point, and she's going to be the champion. Then she signed the contract. And then Sasha Banks, the women's champion, like a boss, which is her gimmick. Or is it like a bouse? Maybe that's the way to say it. Like a bouse. I'm so stupid. She stamped the contract. She's too good to sign it. She has a stamp that she walks around with. She has her own stamp. She's like a notary public. How cool is that? She then threw the contract in Becky's face, and when Becky went to catch it, Sasha attacked her. Becky did end up taking Sasha down and putting her in the armbar for the tap out. I have to say, Becky Lynch's armbar is just absolutely sickening, and in a good way. It pains me just to watch it. I'm really looking forward to this match. The women almost always deliver on these TakeOver shows. And actually, I think it was a year ago in May. It might have been a year ago. We had the Natty Charlotte match for the championship where Charlotte won the title. That was like a 16-minute match. I think Brett was in Natty's corner and Ric Flair was in his daughter's corner. That was a great, great match. So if these two women can have the kind of match those two had a year ago, then we're in for a treat. We got some crappy 280p quality video footage of Alex Riley standing in what looked like his bedroom, talking about how he has to have knee surgery, and he's starting to think all of these risks that he's been taking, like, you know, quitting his announcer job to become a wrestler and challenging Kevin Owens to a million matches and getting a million ass kickings. He's starting to think maybe it wasn't worth it. He said last week when Owens laid him out with that apron powerbomb, the fans chanted, "Thank you, Owens." He said, "It's not worth it, and you will not be seeing Alex Riley for a while." And all I can say to that, if that's all it took, my thanks to the fine folks at Full Sail University. Just wait until we get to the sad tweet segment later in the show. Dana Brooke did another bad promo in the back, complaining about Charlotte getting so much screen time in those tap-out commercials. So there's your next feud. Good luck, Charlotte. Main event was Hideo Itami against Tyler Breeze. We've seen this match a million times, but I like both guys, and they work well together. And it was done to build up their three-way at TakeOver. And so that's all the criteria that I need. I'm okay with it. Finn Balor was sitting at ringside looking less demon-esque and actually quite dapper in his black suit. He was flashing Bullet Club hand signs to some kids in the front row, which was awesome. Finish came when Itami, outside the ring, accidentally kicked Balor. I think he kicked him in the face. Knocked him so hard he went through the barricade. Or at least they had those metal barricades down there. Just, you know, he knocked it back a little bit. And he had been aiming for Breeze. Breeze moved out of the way. So anyway, back in the ring, Itami caught Breeze with a kick to the face for the pin. After the match, Breeze attacked Hideo from behind, which brought Finn Balor into the ring to get rid of Breeze. Balor then tried to help Itami up, but Tyler Breeze caught him with a supermodel kick from hell, followed by a beauty shot to Itami. And yes, Tyler Breeze was the last man standing. Why? Because he's fucking cool. That's why. What a stupid question, I know. Audible is offering listeners of The Sound Off a free audiobook of your choice, along with a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/solomonster and choose from over 180,000 titles. Among them, Chris Jericho's most recent book is up there. That was his third. Shawn Michaels' new book as well. Just punch in our URL, audibletrial.com/solomonster. That's audibletrial.com/solomonster for your free audiobook download. Let's talk TNA. For the first time in 2 weeks, I've been able to catch up on Impact. I watched it live as it aired, although it was actually on a two-hour delay, but I watched it the way that the rest of you, well, those of you that actually watch Impact, watched it. This was their, I call it the live but not really show. Josh Matthews was back flying solo on commentary, so no Al Snow. Looks like that experiment may be over. Bully Ray came back on this show. I was very surprised to see him on here, but there he was. He walked out right at the beginning wearing a referee shirt. They made him the special referee for the championship main event between Kurt Angle and Eric Young. From what I understand, I think it was an item on PWInsider.com that said, according to their sources, as of right now at least, the Bully thing was only a one-shot deal. This is not a case where he's back in TNA full-time. No, he has no contract with TNA. This was a one-shot deal like the one-shot deal he did for the Royal Rumble. So who the hell knows where Bully Ray may end up. Maybe he'll end up making that deal with TNA, but this was only a one-shot deal. Although his lady friend, Velvet Sky, who also came back, I believe she is back full-time in TNA. But that is not the case for Bully Ray, at least as of today. He is not under any kind of contract. It's too bad that, you know, WWE didn't see any value in Bully as an upper card guy. You know, maybe have him come out and answer John Cena's open challenge and not beat Cena for the championship, but it could be the start of a program maybe with him and Cena for the U.S. title. I always thought for some reason, you know, John Cena against Bully Ray, like the TNA version of Bully Ray, would actually make for an entertaining feud and probably some entertaining promos. I don't know how the matches would be, but I always thought that would be a good feud to have. But I guess they just don't see the value in him. He's too old. You know, Vince has tunnel vision. There's been a lot of talk about Vince's vision this week. Most of it bullshit, by the way. But tunnel vision is definitely something that he is guilty of having. And I think they made a big mistake by not doing more than what they did with Bully Ray. And I say Bully, not Bubba. Because if their idea was to bring back Bubba in that character they had him do at the Rumble and use him as Bubba, then you may as well not sign the fucking guy. I'm talking about Bully fucking Ray. The guy who was cutting kick-ass promos, reinvented himself. That's the guy who I think could have value in WWE. I said this earlier. I mean, they're really weak on the heel side right now. So all this talk about turning the Shield and reuniting them, it's so premature, it doesn't make any sense. But you know what? I mean, he could play either role, but he really is best suited to be a heel. Why not plug Bully Ray in there? I'm not saying put the fucking title on him, but he could absolutely be a heel, you know, third or fourth from the top, doing favors for the Authority or whatever. There's value in this guy. But they don't see it. MVP cut a pretty good promo, actually, on the Rising, which is the unit of Drew Galloway and Micah and what's the other guy? I forgot the other guy's name. It was Drew Galloway, Micah, and Elijah, I think the other guy is. And in the process of cutting this promo, he dropped an N-bomb, or at least something they bleeped out to make it sound like he said the N-word. I don't know. Maybe he said, I'm just getting myself in trouble. I don't know what he said. Whatever he said, they bleeped it out. And it was clearly intended to cause a stir. The rest of the promo, I mean, that was done for shock value. I don't care about that. The promo itself, though, was actually pretty good. And he told Drew Galloway, "You care about work rate, I care about interest rates." To be fair, I care about interest rates, too. Way more than work rate. Very much so. I care about interest rates. Especially for my unfixed student loans. So nobody cares more about interest rates, and nobody is happier that interest rates are still at zero than I am, just for the record. This led to a match that saw Galloway pin MVP with the Future Shock DDT, but Galloway, Micah, and I think I said Elijah before, it's actually Eli, were all beaten down by the BDC while Eric Young came down with a chair for an assist. He was clearly looking for some backup once he found out that Bully Ray was the referee for the main event. He probably, you know, paranoia set in, so he came down to do a favor for the BDC with the expectation that they would kind of scratch his back in return. They had a pretty good segment with James Storm coming out with a gift that he had for Mickey James, who, of course, is engaged to be married to Magnus, who eventually came out. He looked very angry. I haven't seen the last 2 weeks of Impact. I've heard the stuff with these three has actually been really good, so I haven't seen those segments. But this was pretty good stuff. You know, again, some of the best stuff is a playoff real life. Like, everybody knows that Magnus and Mickey are really getting married. And here's this asshole who's clearly trying to get in on this guy's wife, or at least just play head games to fuck with him. I mean, people can relate to that. However, maybe I'm wrong. Actually, maybe I shouldn't say that, because the people booed Magnus when he attacked James Storm. James Storm, the gift that he had for her was a guitar. Very nice gift. I thought maybe they were going to have James Storm break the guitar over Mickey James's head to get heat on James Storm. But they didn't go down that road. I don't know if the Destination America would have approved that anyway. But Magnus came out. He ended up bashing James Storm in the head with the guitar after James Storm said, "Hey, I got another gift here." It was like some kind of, I don't even know what it was, like a rag for their child, their baby. That was all that Magnus needed to hear. He was already on his way out. He walked back to the ring, and that's when he whacked a pretty wicked, chair shot, guitar shot to the head. And then he walked out. Mickey James was obviously not very happy about this because, hey, he's just a friend. What's wrong with you? Why are you so jealous? Right? I'm sure some people listening to this podcast can relate to this. You know how this story ends. But the segment itself was actually really good, and I'm digging it. I'm digging the stuff that they're doing here. Matt Hardy came out to vacate the TNA Tag Team titles because his brother is an idiot. This makes the second straight time those titles have been vacated due to injury. This brought out Austin Aries and Bobby Roode, who talked about the importance of the titles. What's that? I don't know what that means. The importance of the titles? What a foreign concept that is. And how they deserve to not be vacated every other month. They deserve a stable, good set of tag team champions. And that brought out Davey Richards, one half of the Wolves, the former champs, who then introduced the returning Eddie Edwards, all healed up and medically cleared as of noon that day. from his broken heel. He's actually been back on the indies for a few weeks now. I said before, I don't know why they even bothered taking the titles off them in the first place. I mean, you had people in the Impact Zone going, welcome back, welcome back. I mean, wasn't it like maybe a month ago, maybe, that he cut that promo on crutches and vacated the titles? I don't even know if it was a full month. I mean, even if it was 5 weeks, you know what I mean? Like, was it really necessary to go through all this other nonsense and strip them and have a tournament? I don't know. But anyway, Eddie Edwards is back. And it kind of reminds me of Kane back in 2000. One of my favorite episodes of Raw was the big 10-man tag in Dallas. It was The Rock, Cactus Jack, Rikishi, and Too Cool against Triple H and the Radicals. And at the end of that, that match had incredible heat. And it was a pretty good match, too. But the crowd is what made that match. It was so hot. And when the match was over, the lights went out because, you know, DX ran down with pipes and they were beating the hell out of everybody. Lights go out, Kane's music hits, lights come on, it's Paul Bearer, a slimmed-down Paul Bearer in a red suit jacket, or a red blazer. And the pyro hits, and out comes Kane, looking as badass as ever. You know, I get very nostalgic about Kane's original gear and his original mask and everything, but I have to say, one thing that does not get enough love is the second Kane outfit and mask, which was basically very, very much like the first, only it had more black. It wasn't like all red with a little bit of black. It was mostly black, a little bit of red. I thought he looked even more sinister with that. He looked like a badass, but he came out. Anyway, the reason I mentioned this is he comes out and you've got Jim Ross on con. Kane is back! Kane is back! I could be wrong, but I'm fairly certain that the last time we had seen Kane was like 2 weeks before that at the Royal Rumble. He was gone 2 weeks. And Jim Ross was shouting like we hadn't seen this guy in a freaking year. So listening to these fans chant, welcome back, rang hollow the same way it did when JR tried to tell us what a big deal it was that Kane had come back. All you had to say is Kane is here and he's going to kick people's ass. Kane is back. I didn't know he left. Same thing here. But anyway, the Wolves challenge Rude and Aries to a best-of-five series for the tag team titles. So you can sign me up for that. That sounds awesome. So happy that Bobby Roode and Austin Aries are back together as a team. Now we just need them back to be heels. And then we'll be golden. I feel like they're right on the perimeter there. They were kind of teasing being heels, but I don't know. Maybe during this best-of-five, they'll go all the way with it. Velvet Sky also came back. I mentioned that. She interjected herself during an Angelina Love promo segment in the ring, and Velvet Sky had this very stern, serious look on her face, and she ended up attacking Angelina Love until security pulled her off. The entire time she had that serious look on her face, her facial expression did not change, so unless she Botoxed herself to death, it was as good of an acting performance, I guess, as we've ever seen from Velvet Sky. Thankfully, no dialogue. Main event saw Kurt Angle retain his TNA World Heavyweight Championship against Eric Young with the ankle lock. Bully Ray was the referee. He got low-blowed by EY at one point, which allowed for the BDC to come down. They attacked Kurt Angle outside the ring. Chris Melendez hopped down to the ring to make the save, but he failed. The Rising came out, fought off the BDC. EY nailed a pile driver on Kurt Angle for a near fall that just made me cringe. I mean, just the sight of Kurt Angle being dumped on his head. Yeesh, I don't need to see that. Angle got the ankle lock with the tap out for the clean win, and Bully Ray raised his arm when the match was over. I guess they couldn't really do an angle since, again, it was a one-shot deal for Bully, so, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to have Bully turn heel on him? If the guy doesn't have a contract, then there's not much you can do. So Bully left, and they went off the air with Kurt Angle raising his arms in celebration of his great championship victory. This was a good show. I really have no complaints. It was a good episode. They had a couple of surprises on there, some strong mic work. Again, it was my first Impact in a couple of weeks. I didn't go out of my way to not watch the other shows. I just have not had time. Other things have been going on. But I'm glad I caught this week's show. Speaking of shows that I'm glad to catch every single week, Lucha Underground. We're in the home stretch here. A lot of shows. Way too many shows. But we had Lucha Underground this week, which had a Johnny Mundo, Alberto El Patron segment opening the show with Dario Cueto. They're in his office. And they want a shot at the Lucha Underground Championship. So Cueto makes a new number one contenders match next week with Hernandez, who already earned his number one contender credentials, if you remember, in that three-way the week before. Next week, he will meet the winner of tonight's match with Johnny Mundo and El Patron, which basically rendered last week's three-way pointless, so this didn't really make much sense. We had the crew, Cortez Castro and Mr. Cisco, beating Son of Havoc and Angelico. Ivelisse was outside the ring in an ankle cast. She has a legitimately broken ankle. She, of course, is one-third of the Trios Tag Team Champions. She was out there screaming the whole time. And the crew nailed their... It's like a flapjack into a codebreaker finish on Son of Havoc for the pin. We had a segment back in Dario Cueto's office again with Daivari. They finally have acknowledged him. It is, in fact, Daivari. He is sitting across from the boss. And Dario Cueto is trying to talk to him. And the whole time, Daivari is just... I think he had a drink in his hand. He's looking down at his smartphone. He is texting. He is scrolling. He is paying absolutely no attention to what Dario Cueto is saying. And Dario just... They had this five-second-long camera shot of him just staring a hole in Daivari. It was great. It was so great. And he, you know, Cueto said, look, I don't get it. You know, I know you're part of a wealthy family. You've bought up some property here in Boyle Heights. You own this building. You own that building. Why are you here? And Daivari says, well, all of that is true, but I like to inflict violence. And he walked off. Cueto made a match, though, between Daivari and Tejano. If you remember, the way they introduced Daivari was he was a fan sitting in the front row. And during one of the matches a couple of weeks ago, Tejano got thrown into him, and he didn't like that, so he did the only normal thing that a person would do if somebody is accidentally thrown into you. You beat the shit out of that person who got thrown into you, because that's fair. So that's how they introduced him. Tejano, of course, is just chomping at the bit, can't wait to get his hands on this piece of garbage. And they start the match. The match went all of 20 seconds. Tejano came out, he let his emotions get the best of him, he kept beating him and beating him and beating him, and the referee trying to pull him off, and Tejano shoves the referee down. Big mistake. Referee calls for the DQ. I think Daivari may have spit at him, he bailed, and that was it. Kind of a waste. Obviously, they'll meet again, maybe next week. We got a backstage segment with Prince Puma and Conan meeting with Hernandez. Conan was telling Hernandez, not cool. Not cool what you tried to do last week. You tried to cost this guy, my guy, the Lucha Underground Championship. Hernandez is like, I was trying to help him. And Conan was not buying it. And Dario Cueto came on by. He said, I would love to see Hernandez against Prince Puma, but we've changed things a little bit. So again, you're not going to get your shot tonight. Instead, Hernandez, you're going to meet the winner of Johnny Mundo and Alberto next week, which Hernandez was not thrilled with. He said, tonight... It's going to be Hernandez teaming up with Prince Puma against King Cuerno, and they call him Cage. He had, they call him Cage. I'm just going to call him that. That's what they call him. They call him Cage. Now, when they have Melissa Santos do the ring announcements, that's what she says. She says, you know, and in this corner from wherever the hell he's from, weighing whatever the hell he weighs, they call him Cage. It's like the man they call Vader. So anyway... They call him Cage and King Cuerno against Prince Puma and Hernandez. This was the turn by Hernandez. He got sick of Prince Puma late in the match, gave him a border toss onto the apron, basically an apron powerbomb. We've seen quite a few apron powerbombs recently. Conan yelled at Hernandez for it, so it doesn't look like he's turning on Puma, at least not yet. He is siding with his man for now. But maybe I spoke too soon on that, you know. Maybe Conan in the end will end up turning on Puma. Back inside the ring, they call him Cage, flattened Puma with Weapon X, got the pin. Wow. Champs are chumps on Lucha Underground. Not cool. It does further the story, though, whereas WWE routinely beats their champions for no good reason at all whatsoever. There's no rhyme or reason for why they beat their champions. 9 times out of 10, it just leaves you scratching your head, like, why did they do that? At least here, I know why they did that. Doesn't make it better, but at least there's an explanation for why. I still think they could have just did an injury angle after that border toss. They could have carted Puma off. They didn't have to throw him back in and have somebody beat him. Main event was El Patron against Johnny Mundo. Great match. These two had a great match. El Patron beat Mundo with a kneeling super kick to the face for the pin. I love Alberto super kicks. I mean, it's no secret how they get that sound effect, but nobody does it better than him. When he throws his kicks, they sound like deadly weapons. And he nailed Johnny Mundo in the face with a sick kick, got the pin. I mean, it was lights out, no doubt about it. Great match. Go out of your way to see it. Show ended with Katrina narrating a video talking about how death is defined as a permanent end, but the time for sleep is over. And we see Mil Muertes inside the casket, the very same casket that Phoenix put him in that Grave Consequences match all those weeks ago. And we see Mil Muertes laying in there, and as soon as Katrina says that, his eyes pop open with some freaky, deaky-looking contact lenses. This was cool. I don't understand why Katrina would be the one to wake him up when they split, and she was actually the one who slammed the lid shut at the end of his match with Phoenix. It almost seemed like they were getting back together. We also haven't seen Katrina at all with Phoenix since Phoenix won that match. Women, can't figure them out. Before we get to the mailbag, here we have some news, finally, at long last, on Jeff Jarrett's Global Force Wrestling. They had a press conference this week. Although, as somebody who actually is in PR and will sometimes oversee press conferences for a living, is it really a press conference if no real press shows up? That is the question. There was hardly any press at all there. They didn't stream it. It didn't air anywhere. It was kind of pathetic the way they set this whole thing up. But they had Chael Sonnen there. He will be their analyst, which is a fancier way of saying announcer. They are reportedly trying very hard to get Jim Ross to be his partner. Jim Ross has talked about GFW in some of his recent blogs. He doesn't deny it. He doesn't outright say, I will not work for GFW. He actually expresses an interest maybe in doing something. But, you know, he said it's more an issue of his schedule. He doesn't know that he could fit in a regular taping schedule. But they are supposedly going after him very hard to be Chael Sonnen's partner. You know, Jarrett tapped JR to be his play-by-play guy with Matt Stryker for that Wrestle Kingdom show back in January. So they have that relationship already. Would not surprise me at all to see them reach some kind of deal. So here's what the current roster looks like. This is the roster that they announced for Global Force Wrestling. Davey Boy Smith Jr., Lance Hoyt, Carl Anderson, Doc Gallows, the former Chris Masters as well, Seiya Sonata, Moose from Ring of Honor, who is still with ROH, by the way. This doesn't mean he has left Ring of Honor. PJ Black, who is the former Justin Gabriel, and on the female side, we have Thea Trinidad and Lady Tappa. I am nonplussed. I'm very surprised that he did not make a big announcement like this and kick it off with an actual big wrestling name. I mean, he had Chael Sonnen there, but Chael Sonnen ain't wrestling. I mean, he's the frickin' announcer. You know, they have some talented guys on that roster. I shouldn't say that I'm, like, disappointed. I mean, it's a roster. What can I say? There's a lot of very talented guys in every company right now. In WWE, NXT, if you count that as a separate brand, TNA, ROH. Tommy Dreamer even puts together some pretty impressive lineups for his, you know, hardcore homecoming, or what the hell is it called? House of Hardcore, right? I got my hardcores mixed up there. My point is, you know, New Japan, these are mostly, not entirely, but mostly New Japan guys. And not even the high-end New Japan guys. So I see this roster and I'm like, that's it? Where's the big name? Where's the big name that's going to carry that brand? That's what I was expecting. Or big names. And they didn't have any. They've got to find some. You can't put a roster out like that and expect to get a TV deal, a good TV deal, and get a million people watching your show. That's not going to happen. So they've got to find somebody. I imagine they don't have them yet, or else they would have had them at that press conference. They have TV tapings. Not only do they not have any big stars to kind of lead the roster, they don't have any TV deal, but they've got TV tapings. They've got three of them scheduled. From July through October, I think. There's three different ones. The first one, I think, is July 24th, I believe, out in Vegas. So, anyway, this all means nothing without a TV deal, a decent TV deal, not 3 o'clock in the morning on fucking QVC. So that will be the big announcement once they're ready to make it. Let's get to the mailbag. If you have questions, email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. We'll get to a few here. I don't have time for too many. St. Clair from Los Angeles, California. If WWE still owned OVW, as well as FCW, a.k.a. NXT, how do you think their developmental system would be? Depends on who they have training the guys there. I like the idea of different styles being taught, maybe rotating guys out from one developmental territory to another. I would be in favor of NXT territories, and I've kind of touched on this idea before as far as having territories in different parts of the country, maybe one up in Canada. I would be in favor of a system like that. You can call them NXT territories. They don't even have to have individual unique names. You can have an NXT East, which is what they have in Orlando. You can have an NXT West. So you find an area out there somewhere in California to kind of base it out of. That's NXT West. You know, they're all teaching the same basic WWE style they want everybody to know, but you mix in some other unique elements depending on who are the coaches in each of those territories. As far as TV goes, you know, they have the NXT TV show. They tape it out of Full Sail. So, you know, logistically, it would take some planning to figure out how that might work. If they can find a West Coast facility, maybe one week it's the East roster that's featured on the network, and the next week it's the West. When they do those takeover specials, maybe they feature interpromotional matches between the two sides. Or maybe you save that for the December takeover. Make that December takeover at the end of the year more special by making it this big, like all the NXT stars come together and clash in like one epic event or however they want to bill it. You know, I realize they just built this $5 million performance center in Florida. So if you're a West Coast NXT guy, you might feel shortchanged by doing your training in a place that isn't quite as nice, unless they build another building out there, which I don't think they would. Again, it's not a perfect plan. Obviously, I we'd really have to think this through. But I like the idea of a territorial system with developmental. I've liked that idea for a long time now. Like with the old territories, when a guy gets stale in one place, you can rotate him or her out to another territory for several months if they're still not ready for the main roster. If they're ready for the main roster, then put them on the main roster. But there are guys that spend 4 or 5 years in developmental. We talked about the ESPN special earlier. I had no idea that Colin Cassidy had been there since 2010. 5 fucking years that guy's been in developmental. Only now is he finally getting over. Tyler Breeze, he was also in developmental. Still is for 4 years or something like that. So if you're in one place for so long and this character maybe isn't working, or you're there and you're over, but now you're still there and you're still over, but it's kind of eroding, and why aren't they calling me up? Maybe you just rotate the guy out cross country, or if you set one up in Canada. I mean, Lance Storm has a school up there. I'm sure, you know, he'd love to work with WWE and not have to leave Canada. Let him keep training his own people, but maybe you can officially, unofficially make that one of your developmental NXT territories. Call it NXT Canada or NXT North. Like I said, I like that idea. He's, you know, Lance Storm, he's a well-regarded teacher. He's doing very well with his school up in Calgary. A lot of his guys and girls have already signed WWE contracts. Tyler Breeze and Emma are among them. Why not make his school an official territory? So you have one up in Canada. Canada's always been a hotbed for wrestling. I'm kind of surprised they never have had something like that. They've had a Canadian office. I don't even know if it's still open anymore. I know Carl DeMarco, who used to work for them, was the head of the office up in Canada, but they never had like a training school up there. They always relied on the Hart family to train people. And Lance Storm, they'll take a look at some of his people. Why not just make it official? Call it NXT North and just come up with a system where you can do that. You know, you can run shows in all of those different territories and just rotate guys out and let them learn different things under different coaches. J.R. Sanders from Straight Outta Compton. After watching the latest E60 Behind the Curtain on NXT, something has me a bit baffled. It seems as if the characters down in NXT are created by themselves, as opposed to having somebody on the creative team come up with the character for them. Take Tyler Breeze, for example. Matt Clement did this on his own. So when Tyler Breeze gets called up to the main roster, what if WWE Creative doesn't know how to exactly handle that character and he does not get over? That's not the wrestler's fault, obviously. Shouldn't wrestlers like Tyler Breeze, who come up with their own character, have more say and freedom when it comes to handling their own storylines instead of having to rely on WWE writers who don't know anything about the character. This just sets the character up for failure, and if they fail, it's blamed on them, which is BS. Welcome to wrestling. Welcome to WWE. I will disagree with you on one thing. You mentioned why not put the storylines in the hands of the wrestlers. You can't do that. Because if you put a storyline in someone's hands, I mean, by the very nature of what a storyline is, it involves at least two people, right? So it's not just that character. There's somebody else who's involved in that storyline. Now you're going to have the, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen, having the inmates running the asylum kind of thing. That's what sent WCW down into the shitter. I mean, I'm all in favor of giving the wrestlers some level of leeway and freedom over their own characters and let them pitch storyline ideas for themselves. That's cool. And I think they do a lot of that right now, in NXT at least. I'm with you on that, but controlling the storylines, that's what they have writers for. They have way too many writers on the main roster. I agree. You don't need 25 fucking writers. I wish it would be a little simpler than that, but you need people outside the wrestling bubble. I mean, if you're an active performer, you can't be putting together your own storylines all the time unless you're a veteran like Jericho and Shawn Michaels. I know they put their whole feud together just themselves back in 2008, but that's a completely different circumstance. You can't have Tyler Breeze sitting in the production meetings going, nope, I don't like that idea, but how about this? I came up with a great idea to get me over. Like, no. That might have been how Triple H got himself over, but that's not how it's going to work for the guys in NXT. So, Daniel from Ohio, 1993 was the first year I started watching the live WWE pay-per-views. Because of this, WrestleMania 9 has always had a soft spot in my heart, even though it is regarded as one of the worst manias ever. I've always wondered why Vince didn't do a passing of the torch with Randy Savage and Bret Hart at this WrestleMania. For this to work, Savage would have had to go in as champion, which he had already been the summer before. And Bret could have won his first championship over Randy at Mania instead of the rushed way he won it at a house show. Hogan still could have returned to do the tag team thing with Beefcake, unless his stipulation in coming back was that he got the championship, which I'm sure it was. Or they could just have pushed the Steiner brothers over Money Inc. and did that match instead. Shawn Michaels and Mr. Perfect, in my mind, would have been a great Intercontinental title match, and Savage and Hart could have had a potential classic and a passing of the torch to the next generation. Just would like to know your thoughts on WrestleMania 9 and if you have any insight on why Savage vs. Hart never happened. WrestleMania 9 is not a great WrestleMania. I like it probably more than most, so I would not call it the worst. I still think WrestleMania 11 was probably the worst. I didn't even really like WrestleMania 2. I thought WrestleMania 2 was pretty boring. 9 would not be at the bottom of my list. And as a younger Hogan fan, I loved what they did at the end of the show. And looking back on it now, I could see why a lot of people did not like it. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, it was, you know, a weak period for them. It was a weak period for the company. They put the title on Bret Hart for a very specific reason. They were feeling the heat with the steroid stuff that was going on. They felt like they had to get the championship off the same old crew. So even though somebody like Ric Flair didn't look like a steroid addled monster, Flair was part of that old crew with guys like Savage and Warrior and Hogan, all of whom at their peak definitely looked gassed to the gills. They wanted to get away from that. They wanted to cover their ass. They wanted to get away from that, and they said, hey, we got a reliable worker in Bret Hart here, Stu Hart's boy, and so we'll put the championship on him. And also, and Bret's talked about this as well, Bret always claimed he used to get the most fan mail out of anybody back when people used to actually send fan mail into Titan Tower. So that may have influenced Vince's decision as well. He said, listen, this guy's popular. Let's give him a shot. We know he's clean. We know he's a younger guy. It's a safe choice for us to go with. That's why I think they rushed it onto him at a house show. So if that was the mentality, then they did what they felt they had to do. They didn't want to wait. You know, they couldn't wait from October to get to April. They were feeling the heat big time in 1992. That's why Warrior left. They fired him because of there was some drug stuff that happened. Same thing with Bulldog. There was some drug stuff. And think about that. You know, Warrior was just in the main event of SummerSlam wrestling Randy Savage, or one of the main events, for the WWE title. He was going to be in one of the big feature matches at Survivor Series, one of the biggest stars in the company. British Bulldog was in the main event at SummerSlam. 80,000 people at Wembley Stadium there to see him win the Intercontinental Championship. He was only the Intercontinental Champion for not even a full 2 months, maybe 2 months. And they took the title off him and they fired him. They fired both of them. If that were a different time in WWE, like a few years before that, or even a few years later, believe me, if they would have popped either one of those guys for some sort of drug infraction, they would have looked the other way. They would have given them a slap on the wrist. The last thing they would have done is fired them to let them go work somewhere else. You know, so that's how much heat they were feeling. Vince wanted his company clean, legitimately clean. Was it legitimately clean 100%? No. It never has been. It never will be. I don't care what he says in that ESPN special. He's full of shit. And I know in his mind, he doesn't actually believe that. But that's what he says. It's impossible. It's like baseball. Baseball will never fully be clean. Boxing will never fully be clean. Football, UFC. There's no such thing as a perfect utopian world. It does not exist. But the greatest effort that Vince McMahon ever made, other than maybe the existing wellness policy today, to truly be as clean as possible, was in late 1992 into 93 and 94. I think, I want to say it was 96 when they dropped their drug testing program because they felt they just had to in order to compete with WCW, which was pretty much the Wild West. You did whatever the fuck you wanted to there. You know, how do you compete with that? You drop your drug program and you turn the other cheek. That's what you do. So they were very serious about it back then. That's why they put the title on Brett when they did, and got the title off Savage. Now, were it not for the drug stuff, could they have done that match? I mean, they could have, but they wouldn't have. There's not a chance in hell. I'm sure Warrior would have probably somehow ended up in that match. It would have been a great match, I think. And it would have been a great way. Savage, I know, thought the world of Brett. According to Lanny Poffo, I mean, Randy pitched the idea years later. Actually, no, I take that back. It might have been in 92 that, according to Lanny, Randy pitched the idea to Vince about doing a two-year program with Shawn Michaels that, in the end, maybe at WrestleMania 10, would have ended with Savage putting Shawn over as the next, you know, star of the next generation. He said Randy wanted to work a program badly with Shawn, and I'm sure part of that was so that Randy could continue to have the spotlight. That would have guaranteed Savage a nice position on TV for the next 2 years at a time when Vince was phasing him out and making him an announcer. So believe me, Randy Savage could be less selfish than most main event level guys were at that time, but there was definitely an element of selfishness to him pitching that idea, if that actually happened. But I think Savage working with Brett, putting Brett over, would have been a hell of an idea, and probably better than what they went with. In fact, I pretty much agree it would have been better than what they went with. And also, by the way, part of it was they didn't really like doing the babyface versus babyface thing at that time. So if Randy Savage goes into Las Vegas as the champion, and he's the over babyface, and the idea is to build Brett as the next big over babyface, you're running a risk there, because if people like Savage more, that hurts Brett. So I know they did Hogan Warrior WrestleMania 6, and that was a huge match. And they said it's 50-50. I don't know if it actually was 50-50. I mean, there were people who were in the crowd who said it was actually more Hogan than Warrior that night. Maybe 60-40 or even 70-30. But you run a risk. And maybe they just didn't want to take that risk of putting Savage in there. And the people want Savage to win, but Brett wins. And they're like, ugh, you know? So the back then, that was maybe a bigger problem. They didn't want to take that risk. So that's why I say, even if it wasn't for the steroid stuff, there ain't no way they would have made that match for WrestleMania. Not for the championship. This week's sad tweet once again goes to one Alex Riley. Alex Riley, who did have surgery on Thursday after all for a pre-existing knee injury. Not the apron powerbomb delivered to him by Kevin Owens. Now, I feel bad for the guy, but this is what this segment was tailor-made for. How could I pass this up? Last Monday, Alex Riley tweeted a photo of himself looking up at a flat screen that had Raw on. And in the third row was a guy holding up a sign that said, "Push Rage." And Riley, naturally, assumed that it was intended for him because, you know, he's full of rage. Rage, rage, rage. So he tweeted the photo with a message, and the message read, "This goes right along with any WrestleMania moment I have had or will ever have. So thankful, so humbled, so grateful." That's pretty heavy. Especially since it's only one guy in the crowd with a sign. But that's pretty heavy stuff. Unfortunately, his world came crashing down a short time later when somebody claiming to be the owner of that sign tweeted back at him to let him know that the sign actually had nothing to do with Alex Riley. It was a reference to a creator wrestler in some wrestling game, I don't know if it's 2K15 or whatever, that his friend's brother had made. Oops. And the guy was at Raw, by the way. If you follow his tweets, he was third row ringside opposite the hard camera. He had a whole bunch, like six different signs he brought with him. Man, this poor guy. Riley did take the tweet down, but not before Kevin Owens retweeted a screen cap that somebody sent him that so that it may live on forever in infamy. Alex Riley, this week's sad tweet of the week. And don't forget, if you have suggestions for sad tweet, as many of you did this week, I think 15 of you must have emailed me that Alex Riley thing after I already decided that I was definitely going to use it. But if you have a suggestion for sad tweet, I just might use it on the sound off. So let me know about it. Tweet it to me. Let me know where I can find the tweet. At Solomonster is my handle on there. If you're not already following me, please do so. That's at Solomonster on Twitter. And if you have any questions, again, for the mailbag, thesolomonster@gmail.com is the email address. Facebook.com/thesolomonster is my profile page. We have a fan page that you should like if you have not already done so. That will help gain you access to our private discussion group, since I could tell who liked the fan page and who didn't. It also helps weed out some of the trolls and things of that nature. So it's not just that I want to get likes on that page, which I do. That's not why I ask you to do that. It's actually very helpful if you want to gain entry to the group in a timely fashion. I have, last time I checked, I think I have, I've let it get out of control. I've got about 580 people sitting in queue who I have not approved for one reason or the other. And in some cases, it's unfortunate because I'm sure some of you are probably lost in there somewhere. If you are one of those people, and if you are a legit listener of The Sound Of, send me a message. You can probably reapply, but just let me know so I know who you are and I can approve you for our private group on Facebook. We are rapidly approaching 3,000 members, and I would very much like for you to be a part of that. And don't forget, we have the JTG interview up. I spoke with former WWE superstar JTG. He was with the company for 8 years. That's a long time, and he's got a lot of stories to tell. A lot of stories about Heat, which he knows a thing or two about because he and his partner, Shad Gaspard, Crime Time, they got a lot of heat. And a lot of times it was really through no fault of their own. A lot of really stupid, petty things that go on there. It's fascinating to hear him talk about it. It's even more fascinating to read about it. So I heartily endorse that you check out the book. It's an e-book. It's on Amazon this week, $2.99. It's a steal. Whether it's 99 cents or $2.99, you know, when the price goes up to $2.99, it doesn't matter. It's a steal. Pick it up. It's an easy read. I did it in less than a day. And I enjoyed my conversation with JTG. You can check it out on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesolomonster. Hit the subscribe button if you are not already a subscriber to the channel. And don't forget to like, leave comments, and also, you know, retweet and share. Let people know about it. That's why I put the Sound Off extras up. It's a little bit easier for people to share it and spread that link around. So definitely check that out. And before we leave here this week, I mentioned, of course, today is Mother's Day. It's Mother's Day weekend, here in the States at least. I don't know how that works abroad. But here, it's Mother's Day, usually the second Sunday every May. A chance to celebrate moms. I know some of you, many of you, still have your mom's with you. I count myself among the more fortunate people who do. Some of you do not. It may be a tough holiday for some. This Mother's Day brings some mixed emotions for me. Now, I was pretty open about what happened, I say a couple of months ago. It hasn't even been a full 2 months. It's hard to believe it's been this long. But I let you guys know back in March what happened with my father. You know, he was involved in an automobile accident, and he died. And, you know, that was shocking enough and stressful enough to go through. And still going through that, by the way. That whole situation, we're not even done with that yet. Around that time, I became aware of some issues that my mom was having. Now, I think I mentioned this on the show before, that my mom has beaten cancer a couple of different times. I mean, she's had some skin cancers as well. Nothing like a melanoma, but Really, it was leukemia 11 years ago, actually, when she was diagnosed, and she beat that. And that was, I mean, that was pretty bad. I mean, you hear something like that, it's just a sucker punch to the gut. Thankfully, you know, at that time, when that happened, I had graduated from college many months earlier and was still unemployed, looking, maybe not looking as hard as I should have been, but looking for work. And I got to tell you, it turned out to be the best thing in the world that I didn't have a job at that time, because what that allowed me to do was spend time with her. You know, the way that that worked was you basically lived in the hospital for about four or five days at a time, getting the most intense form of chemotherapy that you could possibly get. And I remember in the hospital, they had a floor. The very top floor was the infusion floor where you would go for your treatment. The floor right below that, the best way for me to describe it was almost like a hotel. Now don't, you know, mistake my words. It wasn't some kind of luxury condo deal, but it was a floor. You had an assigned room, and in the morning they would take the itinerary for that day. So when your treatments would be, you know, you have to go up to the 14th floor at this time, they would stick it on the door. So you wake up in the morning, open the door, and you get your schedule. But they don't let you stay there by yourself. You need somebody to stay, essentially live in the hospital with you for 5 days at a time. That was my job. And we would do that 5 days at a time. We'd get to go home, and then a few weeks later, it'd be right back. This went on for 6 months. And she beat it. It wasn't easy. I saw her at her worst. I mean, when I say her worst, I mean her worst. And when that treatment cycle ended after 6 months, they then put you, and anybody who's probably had cancer or knows people who have had it, especially any serious form of it, you know, after that stuff is over, you then go on what they call maintenance therapy. So she was still on chemo and drugs of some kind for another 2 or 3 years after that. She went through hell. And as soon as that came to an end, I mean, you talk about kicking somebody when they're down. As soon as that came to an end, she got breast cancer. And, you know, the two of us, we'll never know for sure. They tell you, though, when you go in for any sort of chemo treatment, you know, this could potentially result in secondary cancers years from now. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. That's probably where it came from. Breast cancer doesn't even run in our family. Doesn't mean you can't get it, but to this day, we're convinced it was from the treatment from the leukemia. And she did what she had to do, and she beat that too. So, you know, when people ask me, I've had people write into me sometimes and say, who is your hero? Like growing up or like today, who do you look up to? Who's your hero? You know, like people ask, was Hulk Hogan your hero when you were a kid? Hulk Hogan was not my hero. I was a Hulk Hogan fan. I was a fan of the Macho Man. I was a fan of a lot of different people. I wouldn't call them my hero. If I had to use the word hero for anybody, it would be for my mom. You know, there's a woman who's been through enough shit to last a lifetime. I'm not even sure I'd be strong enough to go through some of the stuff that she went through, quite frankly. And, you know, I'm proud of her, and she put all that behind her. And I tell you all this because, so, you know, the stuff happened with my father. And now I've got just, it's all on me, you know, because my parents, you know, they got divorced 3 years ago. 31 years of marriage. It's a good time for a divorce. So they've been divorced, and it wasn't on good terms. They didn't keep in touch or anything like that. I was kind of the common link back to him. He had moved to Pennsylvania to be closer to work. That's where the accident happened. And so now I've got to trek out to Pennsylvania, to the home. I got to get in there somehow. Couldn't get in there. No key to get in there. Evil towing company has possession of the house key and won't give it up unless I pay them a bunch of money that I have no business paying them. So I said, fuck you, and I went and I got a locksmith and I got in. And I didn't want to do it by myself. I took her with me. We did a little road trip. So that trip when I went to Pennsylvania all those weeks ago, she came with me. It was just the two of us. And I noticed on that trip she was having a lot of pain. A lot of pain, like in her midsection, her abdominal area. And it was weird because it would kind of start from there, but it wrapped around to her back. And I mean, it wasn't 24/7 constant, but when it would hit, it was debilitating. Couldn't even sleep. Laying down and sleeping made it worse. So anyway, long story short, there's been a lot of tests that have been going on. We're trying to figure out what's going on here. Oh my God, it's the gallbladder. Maybe her appendix. I mean, who the hell knows? And she had some scans, and it wasn't any of that, but it turned up something that is very concerning. So
we, you know, went ahead and, you know, scheduled some other tests. And I spent my entire day Thursday with her in the hospital for two separate biopsies that we won't get the results back from until Monday. And so you can imagine this whole weekend has just been, I mean, to say that we are stressed out would be the understatement of the century. Because I guess it just takes that long to get the results back. It's almost unconscionable that they make you wait that long. I know people who have gotten results back the next day, 2 days later. It doesn't help that we were going into a weekend. So here we are. We don't know anything. You know, they got whatever samples they needed. They got everything they needed. But we don't know anything. And we're just waiting for that phone call on Monday. And I'm scared to death, quite frankly. Probably not as scared as she is, but I am, I know I don't sound like it, but I got to tell you, like, this podcast, and even when I talked to JTG earlier, I did so many things this weekend. Part of the reason I did all that was to just take my mind off all this other stuff, and it's worked, but it also happens to be Mother's Day week. I mean, you talk about impeccable timing here, as if going through everything with my father wasn't enough, and then this, immediately after that, and all the horrible thoughts that run through your head. And by the way, all that other stuff that she went through, the two other, you know, cancers, I mean, based on everything we've been told, it has nothing to do with that. Whatever the hell this is, hopefully it's not that. Hopefully it's some sort of inflammatory thing. It's something that can be taken care of. I mean, I still want to know why she's in pain. You know, that's my main concern. But all of these thoughts run through your head. And so this Mother's Day weekend today, for me, for us, takes on a completely different meaning. Because I have no idea what we're going to find out tomorrow when we get that phone call. So I would just tell you, you know, if you still got your mom, if you're hanging out with her, if you're going to take her out to dinner, whatever, that's great. Enjoy it. Don't take it for granted. And you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, whatever the outcome is here. I mean, I'm an open book for the most part when it comes to you guys. I have no problem sharing this sort of thing with you. And I've been kind of cryptic in a lot of the comments I've been making, so I felt it just made sense for me to just come clean and just let you know what the hell's going on here so you guys are aware. And also, for those of you anyway who are listening to this before Monday, if you believe in the power of prayer, then boy, we can use some of that right about now. So once I know more, I will let everybody know. But it's been a tough weekend, but I'm happy that, you know, we're able to kind of spend it together and we're taking advantage of it and we're trying not to think about that. And then we'll go from there. But to say that this has been a challenging year for us, a challenging year for me, would be an understatement. So hopefully whoever you are, wherever you are taking advantage of this Mother's Day weekend and enjoying it. And like I said, if you still got your mom, don't take her for granted because they're not around forever. And that's a very scary thought. So, Mom, I love you. And even though she's not listening to this right now, but I just wanted to say that and just let you guys know what was going on. So hopefully everybody listening to this has a happy Mother's Day, wherever you may be. Hopefully you enjoy all of the content that we provide here as a service to you. So the best thing I could ask you guys to do is just to keep on listening. And come on back next weekend. Hopefully, we will have a brand new episode of The Sound Off. And it'll be all good. And that will be next weekend. So until then, be well. Stay safe. Again, happy Mother's Day to everybody out there. And we will see you right back here next time for a brand new episode of The Sound Off. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Salamonster sounds off.
If WWE were a person, how would you describe them? It's just a very bizarre question. But these are the different options they gave as passionate, talented, funny, modest, except for all those did you know facts they pepper us with every single week. Kind, cheerful, sweet, surprising, adventurous, flexible. How the fuck can an organization be flexible? This is a real survey question here. You would think you were going on a date. I have no interest in dating WWE. They're clingy, they're painfully unfunny, and all they do is talk about themselves. They're not my type.
The Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, The Salamonster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.